last practice we saw Braxton Jones leave. I'm not this way. Any early word, any early updates on?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be too serious. I'm hopeful it's not. It's more of a day-to-day, week-to-week type.
Both players?
It's going to be really for both of them. You know, hopefully we'll get them back sooner rather than later.
Welcome back in. We're live and local on 104.3 The Score. Alex Kuhn, Adam Studzinski, Grant Leader on the other side of the glass, hanging out with you on the weekend. And this is a blast, Studs. I just want to get that out of the way. And I see some of the texts that are just excited to hear live and local on the weekend. And you're going to be hearing a heck of a lot more of it. So I got good news for you on that front. As the Bears season is just 5 weeks away, we are 5 weeks from the start of the NFL season.
Oh, I can't wait.
So the Bears have experienced some injuries. You heard Ben Johnson talking about Braxton Jones, who did not practice today. Other people who did not practice today, Luther Burden, Kobe Bryant, who is out for 8 to 10 weeks. Maybe. 8 to 10 weeks. Probably with a leg injury. Cam Lewis did not practice. Jalen Jones, Terrell Smith, DeMarco Jackson, and Montez Sweat. Xavion Thomas left early with an injury during 7-on-7, and he did not return to practice. Karan Amagaji got the first reps at left tackle with the first team. And it's funny, we're going to get to your calls here in just a second. 312-644-6767. Grant is taking your calls on the Bears. We're going to be talking Bears the rest of the show. Dennis Allen mentioned that they were, or people out of practice mentioned that Dennis Allen and the Bears defense were working on their nickel and dime packages today and their blitz packages.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, was that planned or is that because they had no healthy secondary players?
It's got to be planned, right?
It's like we don't have any safeties or corners, so we're just going to run dime. we're going to put athletes out on the field and we'll move all over the place.
Well, you got to work on this stuff eventually, right? Like, and I would imagine, I know you're being tongue-in-cheek there, but I would imagine they sit down, Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen, before practice and scope everything out.
Yep.
Script everything out. That's the word I'm looking for. Script everything out. Right. But that is kind of funny. I think it's just funny timing. Yeah. Right. Because you got to work on this stuff eventually.
Like,
you
nickel and dime, you're adding more defensive backs onto the field. I understand that. But with the blitz packages, I just wonder, like, how are you working on stuff right now
without players?
Yeah, players. But it's good to hear Dan Weider say that Jalen Johnson is looking better early on in camp.
Well, he's the linchpin for the whole secondary, honestly. You know, we talk about how important we think Kobe Bryant's going to be. We're excited about Dylan Thielemann, the first-round draft pick. And, you know, if they can just get competent to slightly above average play from the player opposite of Jalen Johnson, he's the linchpin for the whole thing. Because if he's back playing at an all-pro level, then half the field's taken away. And you can, and you don't, Dennis Allen, I think, had to do a lot of compensating with their coverages last year. And you know, look, Kevin Byard is, you know, had an all-pro season. I know, led the league in interceptions. He's a good player, but he's not a guy that's going to play in the box. He's more of the true free safety that's going to play center field and play off coverage and deep zones, right? He's not a guy you're going to ask to play a ton of man-to-man. You're certainly not blitzing him. I don't know if he blitzed at all last year. He might have once or twice, but Jaquan Brisker was the guy that they were, the chess piece they were moving around a little bit, right? Kyler Gordon was the guy they were hoping to, but he
wasn't
there.
He was the one that made it all work when he was healthy, but he wasn't.
Well, yeah, I should say, like, Jalen Johnson's the linchpin. Kyler Gordon's the most important player.
Right.
Because when he's on the field, the defense is really good. Hey, the stats pan that out. When he's on the field, they're really good. The Rams game.
The second half of the Packers game
when he was on the field.
It just allows them to get into their blitz packages
and
not worry about him. I know that he got beat at times in that Green Bay game, but he's at least going to lose with some dignity.
He's not going to lose outright.
I love C.J. Gardner-Johnson, but when he's going against speedy receivers out of the slot, he's not going to be able to chase them.
Liability in coverage.
So can Malik Muhammad step into that role? He got some praise post practice today from Bears defensive coordinator Dennis Allen, but we want to hear from you. How do you feel about the Bears as we're 5 weeks away from NFL opening day? Bernie in Algonquin, we'll start with you. You're Bernie. On the score. What's up, Bernie?
Hey, good evening, guys. I'd like to get your comment on the Bears' pass rush. Have we seen any improvement on that or any coaching up on that? Because, you know, if we can't get the offense off the field, what good of our offensive tackles going to do if they're sitting on the bench for over half the game?
Bernie, you've hit on the million-dollar question right here. I think right now that is my biggest concern going into the year, and it hasn't changed from the time of the draft. I know that they're going to get into more of a rotation, and I know they're being coached up, and I know that Jordan Vandenberg and Neville Gallimore and Quintavious Street and you get a healthy Grady Jarrett, you're hoping that you're going to get more pass rush from the middle. And I know, honestly, that DA has not had a whole lot of 10-plus sack guys in his career, so he's looking for more pocket pushers from the edge and pressure in the middle.
Sack volume by committee.
And they're working on the fundamentals, but that's what keeps me up at night right now, Stubbs. Well, I cannot lie to you.
That's still the weakest part of the team, is the pass rush. And the defensive line in general, you would point to. So, yeah, that's the part that's going to keep you up at night. And until you see it, it's going to be hard to believe that it's truly better. And I know they talked all offseason about, you know, we're going to work on the fundamentals more. We spent so much time on scheme last year. We didn't work on fundamentals. You mentioned with Dan Weidero last hour about how Jervon Dexter was saying he basically was in the wrong stance all year. And
that's speaking to what Ben was talking about, by the way.
It is. And now to the caller's question, Dennis Allen said today. So I'm going to get my days mixed up. It was this morning. Dennis Allen spoke, and he did say when asked that the defensive line in general looks better, but is still not where they need it to be. So he's saying they're improved, but not where they want it to be. Now, I don't know what level of where they want it to be. Their standard is probably extraordinarily high. Their standard is probably, you know, best defensive line in the league, which we're not going to get. It would be stunning if they did. You know, they do look better. And I don't think Dennis Allen's going to be out here blowing smoke for no reason. Like, he's going to be, I think he's a truthful guy. He's not going to say that and not mean it. But that also means they still need to get better because they're not quite where they need it to be. So to your question, Bernie, Dennis Allen says they're a little better, but they're not great.
Yeah, well, this is his job, right?
Yes.
This is why he was brought in.
Yeah, this is why you hired Dennis Allen.
Yeah, I need everybody to understand something right now. Ben is running the show.
Yes, he is.
And Ben loves offense. Am I breaking some news here?
No, I don't think so.
Groundbreaking
news. I know. And he's going to spend a lot of high-level capital, both in free agency and in the draft, on the offensive side of the football. And the reason that he brought in Dennis Allen, two reasons, really. One, he's not going anywhere.
No.
He's not going to be asked to be a head coach. So if he goes somewhere else, maybe he gets another defensive coordinator job, or
he retires,
or things are not going well, right?
Yeah.
That's number one. And number two is he worked with an offensive coach in New Orleans for a very long time.
And had a lot of success doing it
and didn't have a whole lot of capital, draft capital, free agency capital to use on that side of the ball, because he was with an offensive coach and a stubborn offensive coach at that, in Sean Payton, one of the all-time greats.
And because Drew Brees was getting all the money. Rightfully so.
And Hall of Famer. And they had plenty of weapons on the offensive side of the football that they needed to pay. So when I heard this offseason, basically Ben saying, we'll coach him better, that is what you're here to do. And I just feel like when I'm hearing Dennis Allen speak, he always has kind of gone against the grain.
A little bit more minutia.
He's gone against the grain. He's always been a back end forward defensive coach. He wants to have weapons on the back end. He's not necessarily a guy that values the 20 sack guy over a pocket pushing edge like he has. He has it in theoretically in a motivated Dio.
In theory.
And
the idea of
and Montez Sweat, he has the pieces on the edge that you would theoretically want. He paid him a lot of money. And I know they paid Montez Sweat before he got to Chicago.
Yeah, but Sweat.
But they paid Dio Dangbo because of his fit.
And Sweat fits the profile of what Dennis Allen's looked for in his defensive line.
Right.
Throughout his career as a coordinator. Yes.
And Kentavious Street and Neville Gallimore. We don't know a whole lot about them, but what we do know is they're not run stuffing, space eating defensive tackles. They're athletic. They're versatile. They shoot gaps. So disruption. There was just so little disruption last year, either in the pass rush or against the run. They have to be better against the run. That's not negotiable.
No.
This year. But the pass rush by committee, maybe they're going to have to do it with exotic blitz packages, with disguise pressures where you look like you're going to send six or seven and you only send four, and Dennis Allen is one of the best in the NFL at those types of packages. But in order to get to those third and long situations, you got to stop the run on first and second down.
Which is why it's so critical. There's no team has won at a high level, won Super Bowls, championships, whatever you want to say, and had a bad run defense. You have to have a good run defense. Again, like we said earlier, average. We're not asking for you to have the best run defense in the league. Middle of the league. Be respectable. Be able to get into a third and long. Because the times they did get into third and longs, that's where the turnovers and everything came from. That you're playing at an advantage at that point. That's what every defensive coordinator drools at the idea of a third and long. Because now you can start messing with the quarterback a little bit. So, yeah, it's non-negotiable. They have to get better up front. And maybe they run some stunts. Who knows? But it all is going to start with the run defense. Now, we said all this, and this is something that I wanted to get to. We say all this, all the injured players, defensive line needs to be better, pass rush needs to be better, the secondary needs to get healthy. But I want to say this, though. The number one thing I will always come back to, and this is what I want every Bears fan out there that gets panicky about anything with this team, whether it's on defense or the offense, just remember, Your status quo, your anchor, if you will, the thing to bring you back to center, Ben Johnson's the head coach. He's damn good at his job. He is, I believe, already one of the best coaches in the league. Top 10, I would say. There's not nine coaches I would take over Ben Johnson. And I know we're biased. Everyone knows I'm a huge Bears fan, right? Ben Johnson's your head coach. Caleb Williams is your quarterback. As long as that's the case, and as long as Caleb keeps getting better, which he seems to be, everything's going to be fine. I don't know how many games they'll win, but I expect them to win more than they lose. As long as those two things are true.
312-644-6767. So we started with the defense. We're going to pull the reverse Rick Hahn here, and we're going to transition to the positive. Let's talk about the offense, although we got to start with a little bit of negative here. What do you shut down Luther Burden for?
Yeah, put him on ice
for the rest of the preseason. The news from Ian Rappaport is that he is set to miss, quote, a bit of time with a groin
whatever
issue.
Whatever the hell that means.
That the speculation is it would be a grade one groin strain,
right?
Which is usually a 1 to 2 week absence,
and maybe another week for ramp up.
Right.
So,
and it's frustrating that he's not going to be able to get that ramp up if, in fact, he misses the rest of the preseason, and that we're not going to see him in games. Although, how much were we going to see him anyway?
Probably not much.
How much are we going to see of the starters or Caleb Williams anyway in this preseason?
Not much. Yeah. We saw a decent amount of them last year, but I think that was needed.
So you're not worried?
I'm not worried. And it's because Ben Johnson's the head coach. There's a lot of things that could go down with this team, and I'll be like, Ben's the head coach. They'll be all right. They might not be as good as I hope.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask what injury would it take for you to be like, oh, God, Ben is...
Well, don't get me wrong. I don't know
about this team.
Look, if Kobe Bryant had been out, they say he's going to be out the whole season, that would have sucked.
Yeah, that would have been a...
I was like, hey, they can survive a month.
Xavier Woods, the whole season on the back end as the quarterback
Cam
of the defense.
Cam Lewis. No, that wouldn't be great.
Those are good guys around for a month, though.
On the flip side, that's pretty much what happened last year. They lost Kyler Gordon for basically the entire season. They lost Jalen Johnson for pretty much the entire season, and they won 11 games.
This is true, but they couldn't.
Because Ben Johnson's
the head coach. Is Nayshon Wright waiting in the wings?
Now, here's the thing about Nayshon Wright. Really appreciate the season he had last year. He was a liability when he was just asked to cover.
Yeah.
I know he led the league in total turnovers. I will be stunned if he does that again. And I think the league told you what they think of him because he got way less money than I expected him to.
Yeah, they saw him in man coverage. And
yes.
They saw how intermediate in-breaking routes beat him every single time towards the end of the season.
He's a
guesser, too. Like, yes. He's one of those Al Harris, I'm going to jump the route and take it for seven. Good player, great season, but yeah, they have to improve their coverage and their speed on the back end to be better this season.
And the reports are that the defense does look faster. That was a point of emphasis this offseason. A point of emphasis that what they wanted to do was change their profile when it came to speed. That's why they went and got Devin Bush. That's why they got Kobe Bryant. That's why they drafted Dylan Thienemann, right? All these guys look at their 40 times. They all fly down the field or around the field, however you want to say it.
The point that I have been trying to get to with this passing game.
Right.
Just look at the tight end room for the example of how dynamic this passing game can be, because I think they've built that tight end room, not only with the blocking, not only having three guys you can line up in line and willingly block a defensive end. That is rare.
Willingly and successfully.
Successfully, willingly, either way. You just don't have that. Like, Kenyon Sadiq out of Oregon was drafted in the first round. I got to see whether he is willingly going to be able to go head-on-head against Max Crosby. Brock Bowers is a fine player. Is he going to willingly do that? I'm not so sure about that. But the other part of it is Ben Johnson's entire offseason has been so confident because he knows that the tendencies that he has are, as Robert Mays on the Athletic Football Show said, in any given situation, he's as close to 50-50 as possible. So he doesn't feel like teams are going to get a beat on him. Mm. And he also knows that he feels like he's going to have a top 10 rushing game in the league as long as he's there.
Which he, as every year he's called an offense, he has been.
And for the quarterback himself, he knows what type of dynamic player that Caleb Williams is right now and will continue to become more of down the line. He knows that Colston Loveland is going to get open against anybody. He's going to separate at the top of his route on third and fourth downs, especially. He's going to be the number one target.
Mm-hmm.
And he is your three level playmaker and route runner at that position. He knows that Cole Kmet is the safety blanket on checkdowns or as your third or fourth target. And Sam Roush, don't forget about Sam Roush. Because I remember watching his tape at Stanford, and Big Ant Heron did a breakdown of him after the draft, and he said one of his biggest weapons as a pass catcher is in the scramble drill. His ability to get open, he's really good moving towards the sideline and in the flat, so he'll be a weapon in a play action. And he's going to be a guy that catches a lot of passes. And when he gets ahead of steam downhill, he runs a 4.6, 4.7. He's a massive guy who runs very fast.
And something
But when the play breaks down, he is a guy who's going to separate, get open, and make big plays in all of those areas. I think the Bears can be top half of the league, top 10 in the league in all of those areas. On schedule, check down targets for their quarterback and scramble drill targets for their quarterback when the play breaks down. And that last part, I think, is why Ben Johnson is so confident, because he's like, I'm going to make great play calls. If I don't make a great play call, if the defense gets there, my quarterback's going to scramble out and make a play.
Now, it's great that you bring up that Sam Roush was really good on the scramble drill, because that's something that they talked about they needed to get better at.
Yep.
And it was really interesting to hear them after the season say, hey, we were actually pretty bad in scramble drill.
Because they left a lot of yardage out there.
Yeah, because you see all the fantastic things that Caleb Williams did. And then Ben Johnson's like, hey, yeah, all that's great. There's a lot more left out there that we could have been better at. And that's not just on Caleb. It's on everyone being on the same page on your scramble rules and the whole thing. And so that's great. Sam Ross is going to be able to help with that, right? Their tight end room, we'll wait and see what Sam Ross ends up being in the NFL. I think at the least, he's going to be a good blocker. Right? Because that was his biggest strength that I heard immediately after his draft. Yeah. He's the best blocking tight end in the draft. And so I think you know at least what you're going to get out of him. There is potential that they have the best tight end room in the league.
Yeah. I think maybe right now. And that's why, like, I think Sam Roush immediately is an upgrade over Durham Smythe, who's a solid U tight end where you're lining him up in the backfield at times. You're using him as like a de facto fullback.
Right.
He's really good making blocks on the move. He's not a displacer quite like Cole Kmet is. Cole Kmet is still the best road grading blocking tight end on this roster. But once again, ability and willingness to block, it is not a guarantee for every tight end. And the Bears have three of them who are all willing to block a defensive end head on and all willing to help the double teams on the edge and also make plays in the offense in different ways.
And Colston Loveland by the end of the season is going to probably be in the conversation for best tight end in the league.
Yeah. He had a 0.57 EPA every time he touched the ball.
Jeez.
So not every time he touched the ball, every target, per target,
that's
0.57.
Really...
So that means that you get over a half a point every time you target Colson Loveland. You targeted Colson Loveland in 2025.
And you saw it
fourth in the NFL.
You saw it in the playoff game against the Packers. When they needed to get things going, it was at Colson Loveland, Colson Loveland, Colson Loveland, Colson Loveland. And they basically, you go back and you watch that game, they beat the Packers with like one play. It was Colson Loveland running flag routes.
Yep.
He's going to run a flag route. He's going to burn his guy and he's going to catch it on the sideline and we're going to move 20 yards. And then we're going to do that the entire second half and we're going to score 28 points in the fourth quarter, whatever it was. But yeah, because there's a vacuum at tight end right now. Not a vacuum, a changing of the guard happening with tight ends in the NFL. Travis Kelce's probably on his last season, maybe one more. I'm guessing this is last year. George Kittle's getting older. He's not quite who he was, he's always hurt. Trey McBride's the best tight end in the league. He's the only one that I will say for sure right now is better than Colston Loveland. He's awesome. He's 99 overall in Madden.
He's really good.
Yes. He's really, really good. He's on a horrible team. But when you see him play, he's really good. So there's a bit of a change in the guard. And there's room for guys like Colston Loveland to say, hey, listen, I'm kind of the best tight end in the league, outside of Trey McBride.
I'm really good.
Yes.
312-644-6767. We need to take a timeout. Bears talk continues after this. Who is going to be the next Bears inductee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? We'll discuss next on The Score.
He doesn't even get any... Like, they don't even talk about Olin, which drives me crazy. And you could also throw Charles in that conversation. Pep got in. Devin got in right away. Owen to me is the guy who should get in. You know, you look at his resume, I think 8 or 9 Pro Bowls, 12 or 13, 14 years. I was very fortunate because I got to practice against the best center in the league every single day in practice. It benefited my career. It benefited our defenses, playing ability. So it drives me crazy. Whenever I get a chance to talk about it, I bring up Olin because in my opinion, he's the one guy that needs to be in there.
That was Pro Football Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher, Bears legend, on Rahimi and Harris last year talking about why he believes that our friend here, our teammate here at The Score, Olin Krutz, deserves to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Easy for me to say. Alex Kuhn alongside Adam Studzinski and Grant Leader with you for another 30 minutes here. We are live and we are local on a Sunday on 104.3 The Score. And Studs, 5 inductees into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. 6 inductees into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald, Roger Craig, Luke Kuechly, Adam Vinatieri. That would be 5. Third time is a charm. We were wondering, who do you believe will be the next Bears inductee into the Hall of Fame? Studs, your thoughts.
Okay, so here's my who I believe is going to be next and probably should be next. And for the record, all the players we're going to talk about here, I think should probably all get in. I could be convinced, right? I'm going to bump Charles Tillman because I think that what he did in his career was so unique, and he did something. He invented a move. He invented something that is now taught throughout the league as the standard for how to force fumbles. The peanut punch comes up every week. You watch a game, you're watching Red Zone on Sunday, someone's going to say the words peanut punch. Because he did something that he was so good at that everybody started teaching how to do it. And the standard that you usually use, I think, when you're talking about the Hall of Fame, was it Peter King said this? Can you tell the story of the league without this player? I don't know if you can tell the story of the league without Charles Tillman and mentioning the peanut punch. Now, there's some numbers behind this, too. In his career, he had 44 forced fumbles and 38 interceptions, which is also obviously impressive because he was, besides the peanut punch, he was a great defensive back. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, will tell you that Charles Tillman was one of the toughest corners to go against. I think part of it was because Tillman wasn't afraid to be physical with Megatron, who was a freak, right? 30 interceptions, impressive. More forced fumbles than interceptions for a defensive back. How often does that happen? Pretty much never. Now, I mentioned the 44 forced fumbles. Where does he rank in league history with that number? He is tied for 8th. The other players in front of him on this list, all defensive linemen. Every single one of them, as you would expect. In fact, almost all of them in front of him are Hall of Famers. Only 2 players in front of him on this list, Robert Mathis and John Abram, who are 1 and 3 on the list, respectively, are the only ones in front of Charles Tillman who aren't in the Hall of Fame. Derek Thomas, you know, he's Hall of Famer. Ricky Jackson, Hall of Famer. Bruce Smith, Hall of Famer. Dwight Freeney, Hall of Famer. Jason Taylor, Hall of Famer. Chris Dolman, Hall of Famer. Julius Peppers, Hall of Famer. Those guys are the ones in front of him besides John Abram and Robert Mathis that have more forced fumbles in their career. Charles Tillman had more forced fumbles in his career than Lawrence Taylor, probably the best defensive player ever, still. So that's my argument for Charles Tillman.
It's a good argument, and somebody who clearly should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
And one more thing, I can't believe he hasn't gotten further in the voting than he has.
Yeah, and you heard Brian Urlacher kind of echo how I feel. We don't even talk about Olin Cruz. And look, I know that as a center, it is very difficult for you to have enough accolades to get in.
And there's only 10 right now.
Only 10 centers in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And one of them during his tenure, during Olin's era, is Kevin Mawai.
Probably the best ever.
And
maybe.
Olin played during a time where Matt Burke was in the league. Nick Mangold was in the league. It was sort
Jeff
of...
Jeff Saturday.
Jeff Saturday was in the league. And more on Jeff Saturday in a second, because I would make the argument of Olin Cruz ahead of Jeff Saturday for this simple reason. These accolades that people will point to will be the Pro Bowls. Well, he was a 6-time Pro Bowler. They will say that he didn't have enough All-Pro selections. Only a 2-time All-Pro selection. Because of all of the really good centers in the league, and also because of his teams didn't win very much.
No, they did not.
Ask yourself this. If Olin Cruz played in a predominantly zone blocking scheme, he was an athletic center. A guy that, if he was given the opportunity to do some of the things that we saw for years from Jason Kelce, or we see from predominantly zone blocking centers, even like Drew Dahlman last year with the Bears, his ability to pull, his ability to get to the second level off of double teams. I don't think we're having any debate whatsoever about his credentials. I think his all pros our selections are higher. If the winning was better, if he had better quarterbacks, and if he was in a system that fit what he was able to do to the best of his abilities, and yet still,
it still was really
still,
good.
He left the Bears in 2011, and as Sean Payton clearly saw it at the end of his career, like, man, Imagine how long do you think Sean Payton was sitting there like, man, I wish I could get my hands on that guy. Get him into my system.
That's a good Sean Payton impression.
And he gets him at the end of his career and never really got a chance to play in that system. And as I mentioned, power gap schemes his entire career. And yet still we are talking about a guy that that should be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think that accolades or Super Bowls or his devotion to a franchise should be held against him.
Of course,
because
not.
I think it's being held against him,
and hopefully eventually more people recognize it. And so you said he's a 2-time All-Pro, 1-time second team, 1-time first team. So first of all, being first team All-Pro in a league where Kevin Mawai is around is pretty impressive. The 2 years he was All-Pro, 2005 and 2006, the two most successful seasons two of the three most successful seasons they had when he was playing for the Bears.
Correct.
2006, they went to the Super Bowl. 2005, they were division champs. They were 11-5.
Right.
And, you know, largely because of their defense, but they could run the ball at least, which he could do. So, yeah, what I'm trying to say is the 2 years that they won a lot, hey, look at that. Owen Kreutz is all pro.
Wonder why. I wonder if...
The focus, right? People are seeing him more. That plays a part, unfortunately.
It feels like the biggest reason that he's not being discussed is because of team results for a center.
And I wonder if that's probably the case for Charles Tillman also. Even though he's talked about quite a bit, you heard Brian Urlacher say coming in, and as an aside, Urlacher, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best linebackers to ever do it, saying that Owen was the best center in the league means something. He's not just saying that to say it. And I know they were teammates, right? But he's not just saying that. He knows what a good center is. He went against a lot of centers. He said that Owen was the best center in the league when they were playing. So there is that aspect of it. And... hopefully the rest of the league starts, or not rest of the league, the committee starts to see it a little bit more.
Yeah, stop disrespecting centers, by the way.
But yeah, the only 10 centers is insulting.
Is ridiculous.
I think Kevin Mawai might be the most recent one. And what's going to happen is Jason Kelce, and not that Jason Kelce doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best ever. He is. But he's so well known when he's probably going to walk in his first eligibility.
My argument, and once again, like you just said, Jason Kelce, outstanding player. If Owen Kreutz played his entire career in a predominantly zone blocking running scheme with Jeff Stoutland as his offensive line coach, I think we're having a completely different discussion about what he was as a player as far as his pro football Hall of Fame candidacy. Like, it's a shoe-in at that point, even though it's very difficult for a center to get in.
Or if you flip Jeff Saturday and Owen Kreutz. Jeff Saturday on the Bears his whole career, Owen on the Colts his whole career.
He played with Peyton Manning his entire career. Great player, once again. But I think there is
And all these guys should be in, by the way. Jeff Saturday is also a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Should be.
The disrespect for
centers. It's really disrespectful.
What a
joke. Hall of Fame coach.
Also a Hall of Fame coach, and Tony Dungy.
No, I'm saying Jeff Saturday, Hall of Fame coach, because he sucked in Indianapolis.
That one went way over my head. It's a good one.
312-644-6767, 5 inductees into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We were just discussing who the next Bears representative will be, but when we come back, there was a comedian who got inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame yesterday. We'll discuss next on The Score. Where is Ja?
It's the question of the weekend, really.
That is the question of the weekend. Alex Kuhn, Adam Staszynski for a few more minutes here on The Score as we're live and local. Be sure to tune in for the shows tomorrow, starting with the Mullion Haw pregame show at 5 a.m. Mullion Haw, Raheemy Harrison Grody, and Spiegel and Holmes have plenty to talk about with a first-place White Sox team, a surging Cubs team, and a Bears training camp that is going through a little bit of a roller coaster at the moment. But as I mentioned, Studs, first place Chicago White Sox, a 5-3 winner over the Cleveland Guardians, and an interesting weekend that started with Ja Rule standing them up. The manager White Sox, Will Venable, accidentally taking too many mound visits in the first inning of the game on Friday, having to pull Noah Schultz in the first inning and turn it into a bullpen game where it was going to be a little bit of a piggyback situation, and then coming back with 6-3 and 5-3 victories yesterday and today after falling behind 2-0 early in the game. In both games.
Back-to-back good wins for the Sox. They got their stuff together after that. Friday night, watching that whole thing unfold Friday, it felt like watching the old White Sox. Was really...
There's moments of that, right?
Yeah, there is. There is. It's not... And this won't be the last time, but this was really like, oh, okay, this feels like 2024. Yep. This is... You got the manager doing something just stupid.
Yep.
Just stupid.
Making a really bad mistake.
Tony La Russa level mistake. And I'm not saying... Venable. I like Will Venable.
But Tony that's something, did do that. Yeah, yeah.
Something Tony La Russa would do, you know? And... you got the post game concert being canceled for a mysterious reason. The Vanilla Ice.
I'm so glad
one.
I didn't go. I was about to.
To
what
the
would
Ja
I
Rule
do
one.
Yeah,
man, Ja.
Well, and so yeah,
I care about his political opinions, right? Like,
Where's Ja? I want to know. We got to find out where Ja is. And Ja even tweeted and said, "Oh, I'm sorry. You know, travel issues. Travel quote unquote travel issues." Okay, and they're not announcing that until the ninth inning. And then everyone there rightfully pissed off. Like, what do you mean? We're sitting through this blowout game where our manager's being an idiot. We don't even get the Ja Rule concert that I came here for. What the hell, man? And it felt like the night that they canceled the Vanilla Ice concert because of the mysterious bullet that hit somebody in the outfield
and
bleachers.
Bleachers.
Yeah, those post-game concerts. Just take the fireworks, maybe. The fireworks seem to go well every time. And so, yeah, I'm glad they got it turned around after Friday night, because that felt like it could have been a tipping point of, oh, no.
Watching this team, it's like you're seeing the roller coaster of a young team and a young manager in a pennant race for the first time.
Yes.
And you're wondering, like, when are the wheels just going to fully come off? When is the full crash out going to come? But the problem with that is the rest of the division sucks.
Sucks. Just terrible.
So the Sox now are 3.5 games up in the AL Central. And the Guardians have fallen into third place behind the Tigers.
Oof.
The Tigers are in second place.
The Tigers, who just sold off their best pitcher.
Yeah, their best pitchers, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they gave up.
Best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
They gave up. They waved the white flag. They're
in second place.
In second place. So, very interesting time for the White Sox. They're going to, as Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel have put it, they're going to slug their way out of a lot of mistakes. They still play very unclean baseball, but until further notice, who's going to be the team that steps up there in the AL Central and takes away that division? I don't see it right now.
Well, Cleveland had their chance this weekend.
Yep. And they blew it.
Yes. So
Cleveland blew it at home against the Mets, getting swept.
Also that. And they had that was a real chance, because the White Sox were busy getting their asses kicked in Boston.
Yep.
So Cleveland had an opening over the last week to make a move, and they're further behind now than they were to start last week.
All right. Well, we promised this. Adam Vinatieri, the former kicker for the Indianapolis Colts, he took the time yesterday, and let's play both of these back to back. He took the time yesterday to hold a roast for his induction speech. Usually with a roast, you have everybody roast you first, and then you roast everybody else. He's like, no, nobody's roasting me. I'm going to roast everybody else.
I would repeat those last few statements about Coach Bill Belichick as well. Thank you for demanding excellence every single day. Your preparation, discipline, and attention to detail shaped far more than my football career. Unfortunately, Bill couldn't make it here today. There's a lot going on at UNC right now. He may be on a recruiting trip right now looking for the next Lawrence Taylor. I thought it was because training camp had already started. But in truth, it's because he's judging his girlfriend's cheerleading competition.
Wow.
That's amazing.
No, here's what he had to say about Pat McAfee.
Pat McAfee's here in the crowd today. Great to see you, brother. The only person who enjoyed holding my balls more than my wife. She held for me in the off season when everyone else was gone.
No. Hey, Adam. When is the roast? Everybody gets to roast you now, right? Like, you went after Peyton Manning's forehead. you made fun of the greatest coach of all time. Talked about his 22-year-old girlfriend, wife. Do we know yet?
I don't know. I don't care. I just know that it's
Pat
really
McAfee.
Odd.
Man, he looked like he was having some fun.
Yeah, well, I think Pat McAfee likes to have fun.
Are you saying he has fun a lot?
He has fun a lot.
Just looked real hyped up.
Everywhere he goes.
Smiley.
Yeah, really, really uppity, you know?
Really uppity, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that look, if you're going to do a Hall of Fame speech, that's how you should do it.
Just make fun of everybody in the crowd?
I know everyone wants to thank everybody. Get that out of the way and then just roast everyone. I think that was perfect. Especially as a special teams player. Yeah, I'm going to take my time.
Say you got inducted. Who would be the first person you roasted?
Oh, my. Am I being inducted as a...
Like Mark Trestman? You're a bear.
As a bear? Oh. Dr. Death, Mark Trestman might catch a few.
Well, I'll let you think on that. It was a pleasure,
That's
man.
That's a great question.
It was a pleasure.
It's fun, dude.
Live and local. Alex Kuhn. Adam Studzinski. Yeah, we will do it again. We were going to have live and local programming for you during the weekend. So keep an eye out on our Twitter page and our social medias for all of that information. And please tune in tomorrow at 5 o'clock, starting at 5 o'clock with the Mullion Hall pregame show. All day shows reacting to a first place White Sox team, a surging Cubs team, and the Bears. Just 5 days away tomorrow.
Bears.
It will be five. Just 5 days away from their first preseason game.
Bears.
For Grant Leader, for Studs, I'm Alex Kuhn. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. You've been listening to 104.3 The Score.